There is an old belief that the universe is made of stories, not atoms. Dialogue Radio with Dr. Jeff is a show that's about the stories of the universe. Dr. Jeff asks us to engage in the storytelling process of Dialogue, an epic conversation on self, society, and sustainability. In an era of going green, what do we make when we tell stories of healing the world and transforming ourselves? How do stories influence personal and social evolution? What does it mean to take a storytelling perspective on sustainability? Dr. Jeff offers stories of wisdom, healing, and transformation, and engages others to tell stories of what it means to be human and weavers of the fabric of the world, Gaia. Expect the provocative, educational, transformative, and mythic with Dr. Jeff. Get ready to expand the imagination, heal the heart, and inspire personal, social, and planetary evolution. Now, here's your host, Dr. Jeff Lineweaver.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Jeff Lineweaver, and you are listening to Dialogue Radio on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us the next hour, and you'll experience a place where story seeds the imagination and inspires you towards personal, social, and planetary evolution. Every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific or 4 p.m. Eastern on Dialogue Radio, we'll have some of the most gifted storytellers, social entrepreneurs, change agents, speakers, and authors helping you make sustainability epic. Well, welcome everyone, and I'm really excited to have you here. Today we are speaking with Dr. Alice McGillivray, and she is an international expert on knowledge ecologies. And our theme for the show today is storytelling for sustainability. And why I think this is such an important topic, because, you know, over the past weeks that we've been having our conversations, we are talking about stories as patterns. And in a complex world where we're trying to learn so much from one another and communicate so much from one another, our understanding how our stories fit together in systems is incredibly important, specifically if you're trying to create social change. And so I'd like to introduce you to Dr. Alice McGillivray to tell us about, you know, what is a knowledge ecology, and tell us a little bit more about how she works with stories in her world. Welcome, Alice.
Oh, thank you so much, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here. And I think you've tapped into a very rich topic here. I'm not sure how much justice we can give it in this short period of time, but it's one close to my heart. So thank you. Lots of things come to mind as you speak. And one of the things that I think is really important is that storytelling and stories are deeply human. You know, they really tap into who we are, whether we do that intentionally or not. And I think another characteristic of stories is that they cross boundaries. We can't help but have them touch on many different aspects of our lives and our environments and our contents and our contexts. So both those things, boundary spanning and deeply human work, seems to be almost gone from many of our organizations today. We trust what comes out of a computer more than what we trust comes out of a human's mouth. And we value deep disciplinary work and focused work and expertise more than we value the ability to connect and relate across boundaries. So to me, that's one of the reasons that this topic you're raising is particularly fascinating and timely.
Well, I think it's fascinating how you just talked about how this kind of edge, kind of boundary spanning, as you're calling it, between people, how we don't value how kind of rich the communication between people can be and what it means to better functioning organizations, or even more so, our connection to nature. It seems like there's that other edge where we're so caught up in our social worlds where we forget that our social worlds are actually enmeshed in a greater ecological world, you know, a la Gaia. So, how do you work with communities to kind of help them get to your point that story is the rich kind of sinew that connects one together?
I think working with individuals and with communities, and I'm not sure how you're defining that, but I'm thinking of it quite broadly. I think it's a pretty natural connection, a pretty easy intuitive leap for people. Where it gets more difficult, I believe, is when you start to move into the formal structures. Because, I mean, for some of our listeners today, this is probably, old hat. But the impacts of Newtonian physics and machine-like thinking are so deeply embedded in our culture right now that we're not even aware of them. We're not even aware of how mechanistic we are in our formal work, in hierarchies, in organizations, in economic systems, and so forth. So that's where the big challenges come in. There are some things that will not change quickly, such as how we measure success of any sort. Right now, it's breaking things down into little chunks that are very easy to measure. And sometimes nature's like that, but often nature isn't so much like that. If you take the concept of an estuary, for example, sure, there are measurable things about an estuary, but you go to an estuary where the fresh water comes down from the mountains and out to the sea, the salt water's washing in there, it's mixing all up. There are the shorelines, there are migratory birds coming and going, all kinds of species interacting that aren't normally together. I mean, there's a lot going on there. It is complex, but that doesn't mean it isn't healthy and productive. And I actually use the term intellectual estuaries as really rich places organizations can create or communities can create to bring together unlike things, unlike ideas to generate novelty and new possibilities for the world.
So it really is, when I hear you talk, it's a, when you say the mechanistic idea, like it makes me think that we've been sucked into the Borg from Star Trek. I mean, are we really kind of that Borg-minded, where we think of everything and everyone as a cog or a bit? I mean, is that what you're saying, that this we're so into this metaphor?
It's interesting you raise Star Trek, and I don't know how many people were Star Trek fans and Next Generation fans, but I think one of the very clever things about that series that you rarely see in television is that they presented many different forms of knowledge. And the unified, aligned Borg is a really powerful metaphor for a lot of what happens in our society. But they also had many other societies with different views of knowledge, different views of what's valuable, different views of how to relate to each other. And one of my favorite episodes, if I can't remember the name of it right now, it may come to me, was one in which the Star Trek crew encountered another society, and the universal translator, lots of metaphor there, the universal translator would not work. They could not understand a word of what was going on in this culture, and eventually determined that it was because the culture spoke in metaphor. And so it took a whole development of a new story, between Captain Picard and an official from this other ship, to develop a new story, a new reality, a new shared reality, so that they could begin to communicate. And in that episode, you got to see so many fabulous stereotypes. The empath who looked for the human relations, the security officer Klingon who wanted to just blow everything up, the analytical data android. So I don't think it's as simple as the Borg, but I do think that once we move into formal structures, even our public sector, where we care about the public good and things like environmental sustainability, if it's not simple to measure, then it's unlikely to be measured and it's unlikely to be managed. So that's take GDP as a big example of that. So mm-hmm. it's a very tough challenge.
Yeah. Well, what makes a good story fit then into kind of an ecological metaphor, or just literally into an ecology, that to help kind of people realize that they're not looking at a bunch of its out there, but that the trees and that they're living beings, that they're not just objects? What do you think about that?
Well, I was thinking about this when you asked me to come on the program. One of the things I looked up was some of Steve Denning's early work on crafting a story. And I noticed in one of the papers I pulled up about storytelling from many years ago, there was an unusual number of nature-based metaphors in it. Things like grassroots, cross-fertilization, taming the grapevine, and so forth. And so I think that speaks to how naturally storytelling and the natural environment can mesh together. And for people who are looking for particular resources, even although Stephen Denning, to the best of my knowledge, has never positioned himself as an environmentalist or sustainability person, I think he has some very practical ideas that people can use in crafting tales. And one of the places that his work has been published with a nice little chart that shows different types of stories with different purposes and how to craft them was in Harvard Business Review from 2004, and in the May issue, and the title of the paper is Telling Tales. Now, I'll just give one example of that. If you're trying to craft a tale to tell people something about who you are and what you believe in and why, you want to do something that feels familiar to the audience, something that will prompt discussion about the issues being raised, and you want to use believable, though perhaps hypothetical, characters to get that situation across, but making sure that if you are going into the hypothetical, it's consistent with your own actions. So that's just one example. But I do want to say that in crafting stories, there are some cautions. When we say storytelling, I'm not sure what you mean, but some people talk about the carefully crafted story where you're really trying to accomplish something. Some people think of sitting around a campfire or, you know, table or whatever, and just kind of brainstorming, free-forming what people think about things. So that could become an important distinction we come back to later, and I have some cautions about the formal storytelling movement.
Well, let's talk more about that when we come back after the break. Thank you,
Sounds
Alice.
Good.
Great. All right. Well, you were listening to Guylog Radio with Dr. Jeff. We're going to be right back. Tune in to Guylog Radio with Dr. Jeff on TransformationTalkRadio.com as the stories of the universe are revealed in this engaging and creative hit show. Mondays at 1 Pacific Time, 4 Eastern, Dr. Jeff fills the airwaves with Guylog Radio, an epic conversation on self, society, and sustainability. Provocative, educational, transformative, and mythic, Guylog Radio is the place where story seeds the imagination, heals the heart, and inspires personal, social, and planetary evolution.
Imagine a chocolate so decadent that you'd never believe it could be good for you. Align your inner bliss with Mother Nature's magic. The power of cold-pressed cocoa by Shosai, the healthy chocolate. Shosai is everything you ever dreamed healthy should taste like. We combine unprocessed cocoa with acai and blueberry for an unbeatable high-oxidant powerhouse. Shosai, the healthy chocolate. Visit us at lifesaverchocolate.com or call 888-287-2011.
Psychic Dougal Fraser, the queer guy with a third eye, one of the country's most popular psychics, joins Transformation Talk Radio with a call-in advice show that will provide insights and information on creating your best life. You've seen him on The Real Housewives of Orange County, Dancing with the Stars, and so much more. From gurus to gossip, meditation to martinis, the Dougal Fraser Show will both inspire and crack you up with laughter. Tune in every Tuesday at 10. It's the Dougal Fraser Show.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day, we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
The Ascension Foundation, serving to build an interdimensional community. The Ascended Masters invite you to join them in co-creating this mission. Allow the Masters to lead the way in activating the wisdom of your heart consciousness and raising your vibration. You can communicate with them directly by attending apportation events and classes in mediumship, crystal light energy healing, alchemy, master studies, past life regression, and more. For a schedule of classes, workshops, and special events, visit theascensionfoundation.com. That's theascensionfoundation.com.
We're back on Guylog Radio with Dr. Jeff, and today my guest is knowledge ecologist Dr. Alice McGilvray, and we're talking about stories and how they fit into our metaphors and shape how we see our worlds and all sorts of things. But before we kind of get back to our conversation, Alice, how can people get in touch with you? I know you do a lot of social media, so what's a great way to kind of get into your conversation?
There are lots of ways of reaching me online. I certainly don't mind people going to my email address, which is alice@4km.net. That's number 4, and then km like knowledge management .net. On Twitter, I am 4km, and I'm on LinkedIn and not often on Facebook, but it should be pretty easy to find me with a Google search.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. All right. So I was asking you in the last segment, what makes a good story fit into an ecology? Meaning, you were talking about we have kind of a Borg mindset. We're like the mechanisms, and we see things as objects and kind of cogs in a greater machine. So switching that around, how do you make stories fit into an ecology?
I don't think that there is a mechanistic answer to this. I think people need to be using their hopefully deep understanding of context when they figure that and those answers out for themselves. But there's a little model that one of my colleagues put together a few years ago in relation to communities of practice and what makes a community of practice really vibrant and lively. And by that, I simply mean groups of people who share a common passion, sometimes a common career, and work together regularly to learn from each other. And Etienne Wenger's been central to the development of the concept. And this colleague, Pete Kellner, put together a model where he has purpose in the middle, and obviously in this context that purpose could be sustainability or something, some specific element of it. And then he has four elements around the outside. He has connection, conversation, content, and context. And I think that could be a way of looking at building stories into a larger ecology or knowledge ecology. With connection and conversation, those are the really human elements, connecting with people, understanding their world to the degree that you can, really listening, and creating opportunities or springboards for conversation so that they can, with these new people they've met and connected with, start to build a bigger body of knowledge and understanding and momentum. The content piece that as Pete uses it, is about the kind of knowledge that can easily be codified or put into print, kept stable in some way. And so, one might be looking at a particular body of knowledge around, what's happening with a fisheries issue or what's happening with a development proposal or whatever that might be. And you want key information readily available, and a story could kind of point to that or give highlights of that. And then that other really important piece that we often forget is about context. And I think in telling a story, you need to be very clear about the context you're working in and either explicitly or implicitly remind people that context is so critical. You can't take a success story from 3M and plant it into UNESCO or from Colombia and planted to the Yukon. It's not likely to work in those different situations. So people need to be flexible, nimble, innovative, responsive, good listeners in order to bring life to their stories. So So I think that little model with the four C's around purpose could be a handy way to look at your question.
Boy, that, you know, that context question is a real biggie, because I think that, you know, sometimes the way knowledge is passed around on the internet, social networking, just old-fashioned hearsay or, you know, basic kind of anecdotal conversations, how do we know, how do we trust the context? It seems like once something's, when some idea has been taken out of context and put into another context, like your idea of, you had some kind of like, now it's failing me. My brain is falling apart. It was the, it was something going into UNESCO, but in any case, it was like an apple and orange situation. Well,
from taking from private sector, like 3M, I think I, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's it. you know, this seems to be why, you know, a well-used thing. Like, I see people talk about Harvard Business Review or Huffington Post, or I saw it on Facebook, and then things go out of context. So how do people understand kind of the mapping process of stories so they know where they come from? It's almost like a narrative genealogy.
That's a really big question, Jeff. But, I mean, you've got at least three elements in there. You've got the how do you know how to trust knowledge? How do you understand enough context to perhaps transplant or transmogrify knowledge? And the genealogy of stories. Boy, you know, I'm not going to tackle them all at once. I'll just take a little thread. I think that stories, in the way I usually think about them, are intended as fodder and inspiration and ingredients, and that's one of their strengths. They're not intended, in the best of times, to simply push out a new reality that everybody else is supposed to adopt. Although, of course, we've all seen them used that way. So I think with stories, the trust factor is very personal, very intuitive. You're probably looking at a person face-to-face, which gives you a massive amount of information about their intent and their authenticity and their passion and all sorts of things. You're listening to the words, the content of the story, and picking out the threads that you relate to and need to relate to at the time. And then you're kind of free-forming from your own experience base on how you might apply that. Like, I had a weird experience. I shouldn't say weird. It's probably a very common experience. The other day, I don't blog very much, but I had put up a post that to me was simply a kind of a teaser, just a little snippet of something I'd been thinking about. And someone very quickly came on and said, you know, thank you, that, you know, there's the answer to something I've been working with today. And it wasn't an answer at all, you know. It was basically a story. And So I think we have to use a whole other set of evaluative mechanisms when we talk about stories than we do when we talk about climate data, for example.
Uh-huh.
So that's just one little slice.
Well, I guess
one other slice is, you know, I saw a scientific go done of Britannica versus Wikipedia, and Wikipedia did pretty well. You know, typical me, I've forgotten the details, but it was at least as good as Britannica. And so whatever mechanism you use to develop fairly stable knowledge has its strengths and flaws. And there's no magic bullet. You just need to become a good critical thinker, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I do think it's interesting you use the term mechanism. Not that I'm trying to say, you know, touche, but it is one of those crazy things where, and I think in our day-to-day life, this type of kind of talk is so embedded into who we are as people that we're using it even when we don't think we're using it. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah, with my master's students, that when we had the MA in knowledge management, I would usually at some point get them to brainstorm all the mechanistic and more organic metaphors they could think of from organizations. And it was very, very tough at the beginning. Like, there were often long silences and people struggling with it, and then you'd get one or two or three things up, and eventually the floodgates would open. But we don't realize how embedded this thinking is, and it sneaks out in our language.
Well, you know, and what happened? So once they kind of got over that hump, how did they and realize that they were so embedded with these kind of mechanistic metaphors as ingredients to stories? What happened when they kind of got off that bandwagon and really started using the ecological metaphors for life's daily communication challenges or doing those things? You know, what happened as they managed their knowledge?
I think that activity, that process, was one of many that we had over a period of a couple of years, where we kind of loosened up who we are, how we think, how we work. And the answer to part of your question was that these people who were well into their careers, typically doing important work, did some amazing project work and thesis work as part of their education. Very, very creative, important, powerful things. And I like to think that the creativity of those things and the power of those things was unleashed a bit by their rethinking and unlearning, as well as by their learning. But I would not say that they shifted to a more organic or ecological metaphors, nor would I have promoted that, because there are not many of those in our language right now. We haven't developed them. We haven't made them normal. I went to a lovely conference a few years ago in Brisbane that was about making sustainability unremarkable. And that was the whole theme, and it was lovely.
Well, how boring.
Well, hey, that's sort of the point.
Yeah. Well, hey, let's talk more about that. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be right back. I'm Dr. Sorry. Jeff, and you're listening to Guylog Radio with Dr. Alice McGilvray.
My name is Dr. Dane here from Access Consciousness. Are you a seeker, a dreamer, one of those people who's always known that there should be greater possibilities available but haven't yet been able to create it as your life? I'd like to help. Go to creatinggreaterpossibilities.com, where there's a free video and audio series created especially for you. Once again, creatinggreaterpossibilities.com. It's free, and it's designed to give you the actual tools that you need to create the life you've always been looking for. creatinggreaterpossibilities.com.
What would it feel like to let go of a painful story that causes suffering? Discover how love is greater and more powerful than fear, anger, doubt, worry, or grief. Superior to any story about your life that causes suffering, there is a story of love waiting for you. Can you imagine a story without judgment? A story of forgiveness? A story that releases "I can't" and proclaims "I can." Imagine a story where you let go of what was and embrace what is and create what you want for the future. The first 25 audience members to contact Dana at danafrost.com and inquire about the Pay It Forward, Pay What You Can coaching promotion are invited to a one-hour power-packed coaching session or two 30-minute coaching sessions. You simply pay what you can afford to pay. In the subject line, please input Pay What You Can coaching inquiry.
Tune in each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern for the hit show Out of the Fog with Karen Hager, the Fog City Psychic. Spark your spirit and ignite your soul with spiritual conversation and enlightening guests that will help you get clear and catapult you into action. You'll meet metaphysical movers and shakers, intuitives, spiritual visionaries, and more. Want an on-air reading? Karen's down-to-earth style and lively curiosity delivers the compassionate, no-nonsense, intuitive advice that's become her trademark. Visit FogCityPsychic.com and book your reading today.
Hi, this is Dr. Pat. Did you know most coffee, not all, have hidden dangers lurking in it? A recent investigation into grocery store coffee revealed three dangers. First, modern coffee farming produces dangerously high acidity and caffeine. Second, mold content in grocery store coffee contains dangerous toxins. Yuck. Third, government agencies have found grocery store coffee containing 400 times the carcinogens allowed in drinking water. You will be relieved to know that Camano Island Coffee Roasters takes the worry out of your sip of coffee. Imagine how your coffee tastes without mold, carcinogens, or poison. Get your free coffee report, The Five Hidden Dangers Lurking in Your Coffee Cup. Visit NakedTruthAboutCoffee.com. To get your free copy now, that's NakedTruthAboutCoffee.com. And check out Camano Island Coffee Roasters.
We're back on Guylog Radio with Dr. Jeff. And today we are talking about storytelling for sustainability, and I say even more specifically about stories as their own kind of ecologies of knowledge. Whoa. That's just saying that sounds like we've been smoking something, but we promised we haven't. But we have been talking a little bit about Star Trek, and during our break, I was talking with our guest, Dr. Alice McGilvary, about how I was saying that in our last segment, that I felt like I have this kind of mechanistic kind of Borg complex, meaning that that we're so socialized to think of the world as kind of machine bits and use very kind of exact, precise kind of mechanistic language that it's keeping me or keeping others from really deepening into our relationship with the Earth and the environment. And so what I'm curious in hearing you talk about, Alice, is the idea of stories as our own holodeck, meaning the story we choose to tell creates the holodeck we're in. Mm. Would you agree with that?
Hmm. So we're assuming a certain demographic on this program.
You're right. I'm imagining that everyone out there listening to the show speaks a little bit of Klingon, maybe.
I think it's very true that we create our own realities as humans, our own perception of reality, our own filters, and, you know, the psychologists have all kinds of tests that show we do that, that we filter out the vast majority of what's around us, often based on familiarity. But that doesn't mean we can't shift that, and the holodeck maybe is a good metaphor for that. One story that comes to mind about that, when I was doing some research for a counterterrorism organization, I was asked to come in and look at what was working well and what wasn't, and what sort of patterns we could determine from that, how they might shift their approach to work. And at one point in interviews with people working in counterterrorism, I showed them a graphic. The details don't really matter, but I was asking them if their group was working really, really well, would it be more like a well-oiled machine, or would it be more like a healthy ecosystem? And in the vast majority of cases, these people understood the well-oiled machine metaphor really well, and had no exposure to the healthy ecosystem metaphor through their formal education. I mean, they might have been first responders in a police force, or they might have been physicists and entrepreneurs in creation of equipment. So where we usually started with that conversation, they would say something like, well, I understand well-oiled machine, but what do you mean by a healthy ecosystem? And that comes back before the break when we were talking about shifting language. You know, it's not a quick, easy, comfortable, or even good thing necessarily to do. And well-oiled machine might have been a perfect answer for their work. I had no prejudgment about where they'd end up or why. And So I wouldn't say anything about healthy ecosystem, because we've all heard those words. You know, you have some level of understanding regardless of your professional background. So I said, well, I'm more interested in how you think about it and you know, what you're envisioning here. So then they would start to usually talk about healthy ecosystem and how what that might mean and how that might relate to their work, and then back to well-oiled machine. And the conversations would go on for quite some time, typically. And it was absolutely intriguing because the depth of their understanding, even though they said they didn't understand it, was quite fabulous. But it was kind of a head-scratcher for them. It was foreign terms, foreign metaphor, and yet they'd often end up saying something like we really need the ecosystem aspect because that's something that's flexible, that's adaptable as new ideas or nutrients or input comes in. You need to be able to pivot and react and carry on maybe in a somewhat different form, and a machine is too rigid for the kind of work that we do. So in a way, I guess you could say that's moving yourself from, like you would think, frontline first response police work maybe has a kind of a mechanistic, well-oiled machine holodeck thing happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it doesn't mean those people can't start thinking healthy ecosystem holodeck.
A healthy ecosystem holodeck. That sounds like they're just wandering around Whole Foods chasing bandits. I think using that holodeck metaphor is interesting, and I when I heard you talk, you know, tell this story, I kept thinking about how that head scratching moment when they realized that you were forcing them to articulate and tell the stories of their lives as counterterrorism specialists through the metaphor of the healthy ecosystem, or did you say estuary?
Intellectual. Earlier we talked about estuary.
Oh, okay. But their organization is an ecosystem instead of a well-oiled machine. I can see that being really. I mean, on one hand, it's like you're suddenly forced two people who think each you know. People who all think they're all on the same holodeck suddenly realize they're not on the same holodeck, and they don't know what you're looking at. So it sounds like that. Just so if people want to start developing this practice, it really is about coming up with new metaphors and then having a group dialogue and just kind of playing around with how do we take our current way of communicating with each other, telling stories about what's going on as a well-oiled machine, and then putting it in something else. But it's the collective act that kind of brings about this transformation. Is that what you found in your work, or do?
I think it all helps, and I think that, I mean, obviously, in that particular project I was talking about, we didn't have an explicit sustainability focus. Okay. But one thing that it's really important to keep in mind is stories are only as powerful as the shared context. And so if you and I share stories that have something to do with sustainability, they will probably resonate more than if you were to be telling a story to an inner city kid in a big American city who hardly sees trees, let alone the wilderness, or, mm-hmm. you know, someone from Haiti who, you know, doesn't know where the next meal's going to come from and maybe hasn't had one for a day. So it's, I think the experiential learning is a huge part of it. And, you know, I was just thinking back to an event where that you and I attended a few years ago, where people came to a place in the country, not wilderness, but a rural area where sustainability was a huge focus. And some of the people who came from very urban backgrounds and went through quite a transformation, even although it was just a few days. But it was well beyond the metaphor. It was well beyond the story. It was about the building of stories through shared experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think the experiential learning piece is huge. And But sometimes it's also a luxury. So when you are in a situation, and you know, for our listeners, and you find yourself in one of those boundaries that you've just talked about, you know, the you know, people who are from the city coming to a rural experience, you know, how do you kind of capture that same kind of experiential, but in the kind of the setting of a presentation or even just kind of a community get together? And I realize that's a pretty big question, and we are about to go to break. So do you have any quick thoughts?
You know, one quick thought is that because we happen to share that experience, you may recall part of the reason people came was because we told a story about what that transition from city to country might be like. And so, you know, that may be an illustration of how a story can create a compelling visual that makes a difference.
Okay. Well, let's come back to this compelling visual idea when we come back.
Sounds good.
Great. Okay. You're listening to Guylog Radio with Dr. Jeff.
Are you feeling stuck? Do you want to be free from fears and doubts and finally feel good about yourself, but you just don't know how to get there? Dr. Schaub's Accelerated Breakthrough Program provides you with the tools and solutions to go beyond your limitations and achieve self-empowered confidence. Call for your free phone consultation at 866-903-MIND. Visit CellularWisdom.com. That's CellularWisdom.com.
The root cause of disease is not what you think. Doctors are treating the symptoms, not the root cause, because they haven't been trained to do so. Dr. Alex Lloyd has developed a simple technique that has saved thousands of people from lives of frustrating and debilitating illnesses. This technique has been featured on national broadcast and cable television in People, Time, and USA Today. If you are ready to heal and tired of being treated, visit DrAlexHealingCodes.com, where you will find free life-changing information.
Tune in to Guylog Radio with Dr. Jeff on TransformationTalkRadio.com as the stories of the universe are revealed in this engaging and creative hit show. Mondays at 1 Pacific Time, 4 Eastern, Dr. Jeff fills the airwaves with Guylog Radio, an epic conversation on self, society, and sustainability. Provocative, educational, transformative, and mythic, Guylog Radio is the place where story seeds the imagination, heals the heart, and inspires personal, social, and planetary evolution.
Are you ready to create a beautiful and powerful partnership between your heart and the essence of gratitude? Are you ready to create the life that you desire for yourself and your family? Then stop worrying about your bills and step out of the daily grind by tapping into infinite possibilities. Let the essence of gratitude infuse you on your journey. Join our Infusion of Gratitude community today and receive your free MP3 audio Infusion of Gratitude meditation. Daily use of this powerful 20 minutes meditation raises your awareness and welcomes health, wealth, and enriched relationships into your life. Visit us at explorationgratitude.com.
Dr. Jeff Leineweaver, and you're listening to Guylog Radio with our special guest, Dr. Alice McGilvray. And we are talking about stories and stories as part of ecologies of knowledge and holodecks and Star Trek and how all these things kind of connect together. And when we took our last break, right before that, we were talking about how using compelling visuals, whether it's the metaphor in one's mind or actually using the visual, sometimes is a great way to help people connect in storytelling with others. But more importantly, when people are essentially in two different holodecks, thinking they're in the same holodeck. If you get my drift, you know, communication breakdown. So why don't we just pick up from there, Alice? What say you?
This idea of being in the two holodecks is intriguing me, and I think that's part of the reason that social media has taken off in such a huge way. I'm never sure whether social media is plural or singular.
Media's medium.
Right. The social media movement, we shall say. Because in order to figure out that you're in different holodecks, you need to have a conversation. And it needs to be a pretty rich conversation sometimes. And so many of our traditional teaching, learning, communication tools are not very collaborative, not very engaging. You know, the classic professor at the front of the 800-seat amphitheater doesn't leave a lot of room for conversation or dialogue in particular. So I think we are reframing storytelling to a certain degree, so it's less about, or could be less about, the polished, succinct, focused push-out story, and turning it into more of a narrative where people are trying to figure out what context they're in. So I think that's part of it. Another thing that comes to mind from your question is that online work, there are so many evolving tools for creating infographics or sharing photographs or developing presentations of various sorts with visuals. When you combine that with story, that's hugely powerful. I mean, we all either remember or had ancestors who told us about the power of radio, radio plays, radio stories, that where television seemed almost like an anticlimax afterwards, because it sort of pushed into your face with set visuals. But visuals are a huge part of our life now. So combining story and visual, and I think the TED Talks are an example of something growing that's doing that very well. So lots of potential out there for people who want to tell stories to large audiences in many ways.
Yeah, well, it's interesting though, because I agree with what you've said. But when we also have this culture, particularly in kind of brand narrative, brand storytelling, where it's this polished, perfectly polished story, or people have a rehearsed story, you know, an individual, it could be your family member or somebody in your community or whatever, that people have these kind of rehearsed stories where they essentially try to force you into their holodeck. You know,
exactly.
here's my story, and you better join it, or I'm gonna, you know, kind of force the, I'm gonna have the story kind of getting my story into your head is more important than understanding that we may have a different appreciation. Kind of, we actually may be in different living through different metaphors, but we can still coincide, work together, find our own way of moving forward. And so, you know, when you talked about these four points for people to remember when they're telling stories, and understanding that their story may fit into a different place, into their organization, into their community, or their community's story may be different, or the story of the land they live on. And you brought up four points: the connections, the conversation, content, and context, and how those four points, if you really kind of think about that before you do storytelling work or do dialogue, kind of conversational storytelling work in communities, can make things click. Is that what you are saying in terms of how people can take our conversation and start applying some of this stuff?
I find that when you're dealing with something as complex as sustainability, as complex as storytelling, and then the intersection of the two, it can be helpful just to have some little maps to work with, some tools or structures, like I mentioned, Steve Denning's storytelling catalog, Pete Kildner's model. So I'm not writing that in stone, but I think that model could be a nice reference point to think about how a story can fit into larger, you used the term, ecologies. So yeah. But other people listening may have their own frameworks or you know, tools that they could use equally well in crafting a story. And I also want to loop back to your point about you know, come into my story, the pushing the story out. I think that's a big caution for all of us, but perhaps particularly large for sustainability work, because you know, there are parts of society that have sort of labeled and stereotyped the environmental movement and environmentalists as obstructionist or difficult or against the economy. You know, there are all kinds of criticisms out there. And so if someone comes in with one of those styles of crafted storytelling that is to spark action in a particular direction, transmit values very firmly, it could backfire.
Huh. And so what do you think people should, you know, how do people kind of test themselves about their story, you know, really kind of ask themselves, where am I? You know, what's my motivating holodeck, the film that's kind of driving my caboose? Does that make sense?
You know, I mean, my biases will come through here, but if I go way back to my, you know, young adulthood, I was of that ilk where there's sort of people versus the environment, and I cared passionately about the environment, but I had that kind of people are messing it up philosophy, and it didn't do me any favors. Fortunately, I was a nice, polite kid, and you know, didn't make too many enemies. But it wasn't until I developed a deeper appreciation for the diversity of humankind, the diversity of motivations, the contexts people are in, and myself as a person, deeper understanding of myself, that I think I came to a point of being way more open and way more inclusive and way more creative in how to try to solve things rather than pushing an agenda. So, you know, if there are people who feel like they're kind of locked into positional work, maybe a lot of the work they need to do is not so much on the content, you know, or the context even, but on the self-knowledge, the self-development, the relaxing into it. I was talking yesterday with a friend who had the privilege of hearing the Dalai Lama speak a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. And I'm not going to try to paraphrase the Dalai Lama because I might get it wrong, but his emphasis was on watching for opportunities to develop inner peace regularly. And so in this conversation I was having, it was, is this work we're doing developing inner peace, or would our work be better directed elsewhere, our efforts better directed elsewhere? So maybe find ways of reflecting on one's own motives, readiness, comfort, inner peace, if you're comfortable with that term, before moving forward with you know, a call for action of some form.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love that story about the inner peace. I have never, that is a really good way to reflect on it. You know, am I causing myself inner peace, or is the outcome more connected to that? I guess I'm relating it to this idea that I think about often, is that we're always caught in the struggle between authoring other people or being authored, or authoring ourselves. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there's that tension of being people telling your story for you, or telling you, here's your story, versus this is going to be the story I'm going to tell myself, and I'm going to be my own narrator. Which seems to be kind of the interesting eternal human struggle about how we are storytelling our world into existence, whether it's an unsustainable world or a sustainable world, and how we all, you know, have inner peace or not.
And I think if you are striving towards that kind of inner peace or comfort or authenticity with respect for the natural environment, then everything you do is authentically going to be working towards better care of that environment, better care of ourselves.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. Well, I think this is a great way to wrap up our time today. And I want to just say thank you very much to Dr. Alice McGilvray for coming on, telling us more about the world that she works in, and knowledge ecology. And we hope to have you come back. And before we leave, again, how can people get in touch with you?
Alice@4km.net or www.4km.net or 4km on Twitter.
All right. Great. Well, thank you, everyone. And I want to thank you for listening to Dialogue Radio with me, Dr. Jeff Leineweaver. It's always great. And every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, you will hear more stories of the universe and how we are making sustainability epic. See you next week.
You've been listening to Dialogue Radio with Dr. Jeff Leineweaver. Tune in each week, Monday at 1 Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time, on TransformationTalkRadio.com for more transformative stories of the universe. Dr. Jeff asks us to engage in the storytelling process of Gaialogue, an epic conversation on self, society, and sustainability. Explore the questions that challenge us all by asking, what do we make when we tell stories of healing the world and transforming ourselves? How does it influence personal and social evolution? What does it mean to take a storytelling perspective on sustainability? For more about Gaialogue Radio, visit www.gaialogue.com. That's gaialogue.com. See you next week on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio. Our hosts are setting a new standard for a fresh kind of talk radio, creating conversations that are transforming the world, one listener at a time. Transformation Talk Radio's mission is to broadcast a distinct blend of live talk radio interviews with a mix of uplifting and intelligent news, educational and practical information. Topics range from personal development to critical issues relevant to a rapidly changing world. Stay tuned. Transformation Talk Radio starts at the top of every hour.
Tune in to Gaialogue Radio with Dr. Jeff on TransformationTalkRadio.com as the stories of the universe are revealed in this engaging and creative hit show. Mondays at 1 Pacific Time, 4 Eastern, Dr. Jeff fills the airwaves with Gaialogue Radio, an epic conversation on self, society, and sustainability. Provocative, educational, transformative, and mythic, Gaialogue Radio is the place where story seeds the imagination, heals the heart, and inspires personal, social, and planetary evolution.
Imagine a chocolate so decadent that you'd never believe it could be good for you. Align your inner bliss with Mother Nature's magic. The power of cold-pressed cocoa by Shasai, the healthy chocolate. Shasai is everything you ever dreamed healthy should taste like. We combine unprocessed cocoa with acai and blueberry for an unbeatable high-oxidant powerhouse. Shasai, the healthy chocolate. Visit us at lifesaverchocolate.com or call 888-287-2011.
Psychic Dougal Fraser, the queer guy with a third eye, one of the country's most popular psychics, joins Transformation Talk Radio with a call-in advice show that will provide insights and information on creating your best life. You've seen him on The Real Housewives of Orange County, Dancing with the Stars, and so much more. From gurus to gossip, meditation to martinis, the Dougal Fraser Show will both inspire and crack you up with laughter. Tune in every Tuesday at 10. It's the Dougal Fraser Show.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day, we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
The Ascension Foundation, serving to build an interdimensional community. The Ascended Masters invite you to join them in co-creating this mission. Allow the Masters to lead the way in activating the wisdom of your heart consciousness and raising your vibration. You can communicate with them directly by attending apportation events and classes in mediumship, crystal light energy healing, alchemy, master studies, past life regression, and more. For a schedule of classes, workshops, and special events, visit theascensionfoundation.com. That's theascensionfoundation.com.